your views, inviting letters, comments or contributions, which may be edited to fit the space available. Cars are essential. I read with interest something else that annoys me about driving in the spring issue. A motor vehicle is essential these days. Most people need their own transport because of the lack of public transport. Where I live, in Seal near Sevenoaks, the bus services are very poor. When I drive into the town, I park and have to walk through the bus station. While doing so, I note the passengers at the bus terminal. After nearly an hour's shopping, on returning to the car park, the same faces are still waiting for buses. To use the railway station, there is no bus from Seal to Otford station, so the car is needed again to catch a train. This speaks for itself by the number of cars in the station car park and in the road nearby, mostly owned by commuters. Some bus services that do operate finish early. Occasionally I use the bus. It's quite enjoyable and relaxing, but in the back of my mind I'm wondering if there will be a problem when I'm returning. Like many my age, I have a free bus pass, but that just gathers dust in my pocket. Throughout my life I've loved all forms of transport: buses, trams, trains, ships, aircraft, cars, motorbikes. Now, I must go out. Where's that car? Ger Horton, Seal, Kent. Undermining value. In the Pensioner Spring issue, the article on the triple lock mentions that the value of the state pension had reduced over the years as it was only linked to inflation figures. Well, of course, it was the Conservatives who removed the civil service pension link with wages/salaries, hence the civil service pension is now only linked to CPI. This has meant that the civil service pension has lost and continues to lose value. The other reduction the Conservative government did was to change pension increases from RPI to CPI. But what is being done about upping the civil service pension to restore its value? Greg Baker, Bradford on Avon. Pensions minefield. In late spring this year, one of our broadsheets yet again decided it was time to attack public sector pensions, the civil service in particular. As usual, the problem is said to be cost. This is astonishing when you consider what money is found. For example, the Bat Tunnel above an extremely costly but pointless railway, and failed IT projects too numerous to list. It occurs to me that some aspects of this issue are never stated. First, there is the myth that civil servants do not contribute towards their pensions. This is not only a hardy annual for the media, successive governments have been only too willing to allow the myth to perpetuate. For the PCSPS scheme, the contributions from civil servants were taken by a convenient, for the employer, overall deduction from the wage bill. This is a real-world contribution from civil servants. That the money was taken but actually spent elsewhere, rather than invested in a real fund, and cannot now help to meet the cost of pensions, is not the fault of civil service pensioners. But what of the employer's contributions? For decades, we have accepted that the government paid contributions on our behalf, but in fact, they never existed. Again, no fund was built up and instead the government pays our pensions from general taxation. If this is proving awkward, once more that is not our fault, but it is an irony that, for us, the scheme is indeed contributory, and it is the government that has failed to ensure its share is available when needed. If the press, and others, have to complain about the contributions made by people towards their pensions, they might have a look at pension credit. I do not wish to appear hard-hearted towards genuine claimants, but it provides an income to those who made insufficient knee contributions. Not only that, but, once awarded, it passports other benefits, such as winter fuel payments, help with housing costs and a free TV license, which are not available to many who made full knee contributions. Second, because civil service salaries saw a general deduction for employees' contributions, the pensions which derive from them are calculated on a reduced gross salary. This results in a pension that is less than half salary, as follows. Imagine the pay advice note of a person in another scheme who once earned £108 per week. A typical 8% superannuation deduction is shown, followed by others for tax, knee, etc. That person would anticipate a weekly half-salary pension of £54. A civil servant, whose gross earnings have already been reduced centrally, would have received an advice note with £100 as gross pay. A half-salary pension for them would be only £50. I know this subject is a minefield and that public sector schemes vary. For instance, MPs receive a full pension for only 25 years' service. Perhaps the media could mention that every so often. John Davidson, Armadale. Scam scare. I am ashamed to say that earlier this year I was scammed out of more than £250 by scammers pretending to be from Microsoft and Halifax Bank. Thankfully, I was eventually refunded by PayPal, but I wanted to warn other members about this type of scam. First, my laptop screen froze and the cursor vanished as a message popped up on screen to say my Facebook account was suspended due to illegal activity. I could accept or ignore, but if I ignored, my system could be impacted and crash. To the right of this was a pop-up ad saying I could ring for support from Microsoft, with a free phone number. It was my mistake to ring the number. It was not Microsoft, and I later found out they don't use these ads. It was a Trojan horse virus and my network was infected. They gained remote access to both my laptop and mobile phone, and said they were removing it. I lost phone contact and phoned again. A woman answered this time and carried out work, presented me with a £258.98 bill for the repair and the installation of antivirus software. I paid it. They emailed me an agreement they signed with my signature. The original man phoned me and said this was a scam and they would get onto PayPal to get a refund, a lie, and the scam was from Calgary, Canada. They then asked me to check my online banking and transferred me to someone in fraud at Halifax Bank, also a scammer, who tried to persuade me to transfer my balance to an HM Treasury account for safety, EA their account. It was scary as the scammer knew one of my balances. I refused to move my money, and he said he'd freeze my account and ring me the next day, as did the Microsoft man. By this time, I was feeling uneasy, and later that day I phoned the police and an officer visited me the next day. While he was with me, the Microsoft scammer rang twice and was answered both times by the police officer. Later, the bank scammer rang twice and I ignored them. I had 10 voicemails from the scammer on my landline from the previous day. The computer firm that made my laptop and phone safe said there was never a virus and they'd installed no antivirus software as none is needed. I've been made to feel very vulnerable and unsafe. I always said I would never fall for a scam and I have. I hope that in sharing my experience, I can raise awareness of how these clever scammers operate. In retrospect, I'd have been better off taking my laptop to the computer firm for help. But hindsight is a wonderful thing. Judith Hare, Ramsgate. Article ends.